Taking a quick look at weather tonight, numerous showers and patchy fog, and numerous showers tomorrow. Stay with us for Juneau Afternoon. We'll learn about summer mountain safety with Bride Seifert from Juneau Mountain Rescue. Christy Nami Erickson will be here to highlight Wednesday's Tiny Post Office Concert. We'll talk with Linda Rosenthal about receiving the Mayor's Lifetime Achievement Award for the Arts. And Robin Thomas and Jennifer Carson will be here to talk about Child and Family Services Behavioral Health Program. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more on the Juneau Afternoon next. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week, we're taking a look at the shellfish industry in Alaska. Researchers are examining the negative impacts of changes in ocean water. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver reports on a possible long-term solution.
Evolution and resiliency are the buzzwords for a sustainable mariculture industry in Alaska, a state that is particularly vulnerable.
Ideally, we could start adapting the commercial fisheries and the commercial processing to animals that have that robustness to tolerate ocean acidification as opposed to the ones that are more vulnerable to it.
Jeremy Mathis is a NOAA oceanographer who worked on a recent study based at the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery in Seward. He points to work being done by scientists like Gretchen Hoffman. She's a marine biology professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and a leader in the emerging field of genetic adaptability. She did a study with sea urchins.
And we formed the hypothesis to test that the adults from the place where there was a lot of low pH exposure would be genetically different from the wimpy ones that did not experience all that low pH stress.
They found that the urchins from areas with more acidic water were genetically different, and their offspring were more tolerant of the harsher conditions. So an Alaskan hatchery, for example, could choose to make the shift from some common species being raised now to ones that selectively favor that trait. But it may also mean letting go of consumer preference for certain types of clams, mussels, and other shellfish that just don't measure up.
These are things that we should be taking a strong look at. But it is a very thorny issue, and one that I think science can bring a lot of daylight to if we work together on it.
In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The National Association of Lieutenant Governors is encouraging Native Americans and other groups to take part in clinical trials. Those involved in a new program say it will help improve results. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
The organization is beginning its Be the Cure program to point out the benefits of volunteering for clinical trials. South Dakota Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels is helping lead the program. He says it's hard to point to one specific reason minority groups are underrepresented in clinical trials.
You know, for example, in South Dakota, I believe it's because of, from a Native American perspective, that the Indian Health Service process is not necessarily conducive to clinical trial process. It's more immediate care, and I think I've seen that across the world. I mean, African American and even women, I think it's a pure lack of knowledge collectively, so I can't really point to it as one factor.
Michael says the Lieutenant Governor's Association is also working with drug companies to get their help in finding minority participants. More information is available at the organization's website, nlga.us. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Tribal, federal, state, and local officials are expected to attend a transition ceremony Saturday for Isleta Elementary School. Isleta Pueblo in New Mexico is officially celebrating the tribe's takeover of the Bureau of Indian Education School. The school has long been operated by the federal government. Interior Department officials and members of Congress are among those expected to attend the ceremony. Isleta Pueblo is one of four pueblos in the state to take over a BIE school. The tribe began the process last year and received final approval in March. A 15-member transition team has been meeting to implement a to-do list, timelines, and other tasks. Priorities include a focus on language and culture. The school serves grades K through 5th and begins August 10th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support by Humboldt State University's part-time online Master of Social Work. The 3.5-year program focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st for a January start at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And this is KTOO in Juneau. Welcome to a Juneau afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling with producer Jeff Brown in the studio today. And by the way, if you happen to miss our show at this live time that you might normally listen to, please know that we are also available at 4 o'clock on our sister station, KRNN, and you can always find us online at ktoo.org. Just a reminder. Again, thanks for joining us on a rainy afternoon. We will have rain continuing for the next couple of days. Our first guest today is Bride Seifert, and she is with Juneau Mountain Rescue. Thank you for coming into the studio, Bride. Glad to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me. Always happy to talk about JMR.
Now, how did you get involved with Juneau Mountain Rescue? Tell us a little bit about your interest and the organization itself.
Well, Juneau Mountain Rescue has been around for years. We are a local, all-volunteer nonprofit group that has lots of technical expertise in search and rescue, tech rescue, and avalanche rescue. I got involved, I'd moved here from Ohio where I'd been involved with Ski Patrol, was working with some Eagle's Crest folks and attended a training. Some of the Juneau Mountain Rescue folks were there and said, hey, if you're going to stick around, why don't you come and play with us? Since I want to get found when I'm outdoors if anything goes wrong, I decided to take them up on their offer.
Now, I understand that Juneau Mountain Rescue is actually part of a larger network in Alaska and in perhaps the world, but certainly the United States. We are not isolated in this type of activity. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, Lori. We are part of the Alaska Mountain Rescue Association and the Mountain Rescue Association. We make sure that we are accredited in all of our areas, and it's a pretty rigorous training process. So we get support not only from our local partners like Sea Dogs, the State Troopers, City and Borough of Juneau, Ski Patrol, but nationally, and there are some international groups as well, and we are trying to work on our relationships with those folks.
Well, you talked about technical training. What do you mean by technical training? From the way you make it sound, it's not just tromping off in the woods, blowing a whistle, and looking for people. So describe a little bit what that means and what type of training is involved.
There are hours and hours of training for all of our volunteers, depending on how they want to get involved. Some people want to do just incident command. But if you do want to be on a tech rescue team, you're going to learn about ropes and rigging, not just what you'd learn if you were in the climbing gym or playing with friends, but a little bit more of the physics behind it. So just for example, if someone was in a crevasse or off a trail or a cliff and needed to be rescued, the blowing the whistle and tromping through the woods, that's very important. But there are aspects of our training that get us ready in case something more, a little bit more involved happens.
How frequently does Juneau Mountain Rescue get activated, say on an annual basis, or is it a wide range?
It is a wide range, and this year is proving to be very active. Over the average, we get about 13 call-outs a year. This year, we're already above that, so please be safe, folks.
A call-out. You are under the auspices, or at least the coordination of the Alaska State Troopers. I think folks need to know that, that if there is a situation where someone is overdue or lost, don't call JMR directly or the Sea Dogs. It's all coordinated through the Alaska State Troopers. I assume then that it is they who contact you when it's appropriate.
Exactly. There is a call-out list that the troopers will decide who's most appropriate. It might be Sea Dogs. It might be Juneau Mountain Rescue. It might be a Coast Guard. We have a sort of a call-out either by text or phone that lets one of our leaders, our team leaders, decide that, okay, we're going to get activated, and it'll go out to team members to say, okay, get your gear ready, and can you respond?
So any of us who live here understand that, yes, we're in a mountainous area. We are outdoors people, but that means that oftentimes we are at risk of perhaps what the elements might offer us that we might not be ready for. Or even if we are ready, there are accidents that occur. I know in visiting with you a little bit earlier, I learned a number of things that I'd never even thought about in terms of considering what I should do before I step out of my house to walk up the trail that's just across the street. What would you advise folks in that manner?
As far as before you step out the door, think about it might be sunny for the moment in Juneau, but it might not stay that way. So some things that we always tell people is wear bright clothing enough in the outdoors. Make sure someone knows where you're going and when to expect you back. If you haven't done that when you've left, if you're leaving your car at the trailhead, jot a note and put it in your dashboard that says, hey, I'm hiking so-and-so. I'll be back at 8 p.m. Here's my contact information. We're in a world of social media. Snap a selfie of yourself and post it on Facebook or send it to your mom and say, hey, Mom, going to hike this ridge. See you at 8 p.m. Things like that are very, very helpful. Hopefully you'll never need them, but it's a great idea to have that available. And there's lots of other tips. Don't wear cotton in the outdoors. Wear something wicking or wear something wool. Bring a headlamp, a whistle, a phone. Make sure you've got food and water. I don't know if I already said this, but check the weather. Bring rain gear, even if it looks gorgeous out there. And one of my favorite things is don't take a shortcut. Shortcut's a four-letter word if you're in the mountain rescue community. So unless you know where you're going for sure, try not to go there unless you've got the skills to take you there. Navigation aids, things like that, having someone with you that knows the way.
One of the things I had not thought about was bring a headlamp because I, of course, don't hike in the dark. But it sounds like that's the kind of precaution that could be very, very helpful. Does Juneau Mountain Rescue often get called out in the dark?
That is a great question. Yes, our calls often come in the dark. And one of the things that we like to tell people is if you're in a pinch and you think you might need help, don't wait till dark to call out because by that time it's a heck of a lot harder to find you. We've got a lot greater cell phone service than we used to around Juneau, and you may be in the ability to call for help, and we can either get to you or someone can get to you or even walk you out based on what information you have available. So don't wait till dark to call, and if you do, that's fine as well.
If folks do have a phone on them that has a GPS function, is it possible to walk someone out? In other words, can you tell where they are? Do you have the technology to do that?
I can't tell someone where to go, but so far we've had several rescues where based on their phone, we've been able to locate them very quickly. And oftentimes we'll just go send someone to meet them and walk out with them. It might just be giving someone warm clothes and, you know, warm beverage and walking down the trail with them.
So it's dark. I've lost my way. My cell service is not available in this ravine. What do I do?
Well, if it's dark, I'd stay where you were because you're much more likely to hurt yourself if you start wandering around in the dark or the fog or anything like that. That's another reason, you know, ideally, we don't usually think about staying overnight, but that's why it's great to have rain gear with you or a big garbage bag or something that you can have with you if you do end up unexpectedly staying out overnight.
One of the other things that I learned that I had not thought of, I saw the Juneau Mountain Rescue caps, as you call them, the ugliest ball caps in the world. They are a chartreuse that really stand out. And I know there have been some stories of those who were lost or needed help having a brightly colored t-shirt or something that they could lay on the ground or on a tree limb, and that really helped.
Absolutely. The days of wearing your very earth-toned outdoor gear are long gone, at least in my mind. Yes, the very ugly hats are super successful in being seen from the air and seen from the ground, even in shadow. So if you know someone that goes hiking all the time, buy them a backpack, buy them a hat, buy them a hot pink jacket.
So lime green, chartreuse, bright orange, neon orange, hot pink, anything that would stand out from that deep gray and green. What have you learned in your training? And from what you say, you're a fairly new member of the Juneau Mountain Rescue. What have you learned in your training that was a surprise to you? As a person moving from Ohio, I don't think Ohio has some real high mountains, but what has been something that you went, I would not have thought this?
I would not have thought how many amazing, amazing resources Juneau has. Yeah, we have beautiful mountains, we have beautiful water, and we have amazing trail system. But we have free and cheap education available in all sorts of outdoor learning environments right at our fingertips.
What would you recommend for folks who do want to learn more about being safe in the outdoors, in particular on land? We're not necessarily talking sea rescue, but on land. Tell us about some of those resources.
The number one thing I want you to do is get out there and have fun. So that is, don't be frightened by our, you know, people get hurt in the woods, but get out there, have fun, explore, and learn your terrain. The city and borough of Juneau offers great courses. Tom Matisse from the city told me that there's going to be a preparedness expo coming up in September with over 40 kinds of classes. Eagle Crest offers classes. The last few years they've had something called Mountain Savvy for young kids, and that teaches you all about being safe in the backcountry in the winter. Right across the street from K2, the Alaska 4-H Southeast, they're offering all sorts of, again, either free or very cheap classes. This Sunday, they're having a berry picking at Lemon Creek Trailhead from starting at 12 till 4 p.m. That's being led by Kanan Bosler, who's one of our other JMR volunteers. And it's a great opportunity for school-age kids to get out there and learn safety in the back door, or in the back door, in the outdoors. If you're interested, if you're not a school-age child and you're an adult that's interested in helping out or something like that, you can go ahead and check their Facebook or call the UAS extension.
How can people contact Juneau Mountain Rescue to indicate if they'd like to become a volunteer in some aspect?
You can post a message on our Facebook page, which is Juneau Mountain Rescue. Just go and search for us. I'm one of the membership coordinators, and the easiest way to reach me is by my email. It's hibride, H-I-B-R-I-D-E, @gmail.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I do want to warn folks, though, that if you're interested in participating in Juneau Mountain Rescue, we are very, very open to folks being part of our membership, but it is a relatively significant time commitment. So that's something to think about before you go ahead and give me an email.
What would be the average weekly commitment? I know training is very much emphasized. What would somebody have to think about?
I don't even know if it's weekly. We definitely have probably about 6 hours of training a month on average. You don't have to go for everything, but we also do a lot of, you know, there might be 3-day or 4-day trainings multiple times a year, and those might be things that you just, they'd be available to you if you're interested. Again, you don't have to go to every training. I wouldn't suggest that, but it is something that takes a little bit of time.
Good to know. We've been talking with Bride Seifert of the Juneau Mountain Rescue. If you are interested in knowing more, contact her directly at HiBride. That's HiBride, H-I-B-R-I-D-E, @gmail.com. And if you're headed out the door, please leave a note for somebody or send them an email. Let them know when you're planning to come back. Take a map, your phone, a headlamp. Don't wear cotton. Take a gaudy, bright color, whether it's your hat or your jacket. And be safe out there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Day after day, more people come to L.A. Shh, don't you tell anybody, the whole place slipping away. Where can we go when there's no San Francisco? Shh, better get ready to tie up the boat in Idaho. Do you know the swim? You better learn.
joining us on a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and in the studio with me right now is Christy Nami Erickson and Tom Loker, and they're going to be talking about a little tiny concert tonight at the post office, or the, what's the exact name of the business, Christy?
Yeah, Kindred Post on
Kindred
Franklin
Post.
Street.
Mm-hmm. And that is at the corner of Franklin and Front,
mm-hmm.
right on the corner, in mm-hmm. kind of an historic location, really, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been proprietor there, Christy?
Over a year now.
And is this the first tiny post office concert?
It's actually not. This is our second, and we're calling it a series. We had the premiere about 2 months ago with Dan Kirkwood and Marion Call. And, you know, it was just a crazy idea at that point about trying to move everything out and seeing if we could have a little acoustic, little unplugged concert there. And it was a huge success. I mean, it was just packed in there, and the sound was amazing, and the energy was just incredible. So I was super stoked when Tom approached and was like, I hear you're doing tiny post office concerts, and was interested in doing one for us. And I'm a big fan of Tom, big fan of the work that he does in the community. So it's a perfect match. I'm super excited to host him and a couple of jazz diva vocalists tonight.
Tom, you're certainly a fixture on the music scene in Juno. How long have you been performing in and around our community?
Oh, I think I sat in at the Red Dog, Lori, the first time when I was 11. So that was a long, long time ago.
couple generations.
Over 40 years ago. Yeah.
And Christy mentioned a couple divas will be singing with you this evening. Let's talk about that.
Oh, we're so pleased to have two. Kari Groovin will be performing tonight. And for those of you who have not yet heard Kari, this is a great chance to come hear her because you'll be able to hear. And the other singer is Alyssa Fisher, who grew up in Juneau, and we're so pleased to have her back in town. She's been living out of state for a couple of months, and she's back for a visit. So I told her about the tiny post office concert in the Seward building, and she was like, I want to be in that. So she's going to be in that. And she's a great singer. They've both given me their list of songs, and they're great. We're going to have two great jazz singers interpreting some jazz standards and some more modern things and breathing new life into these old standards with their stylistic ways. Kari Groovin's originally from Norway. She's been in Juno about 10 years singing. She has a bar band, Kari Groovin and the Wrist Rockets. And she's performed with us many times in a Jazz Divas production. So has Alyssa. They've both fronted in other bands too, and they've done lots of different vocal work, but jazz singing, they're both great. And Alyssa recently attended the jazz vocal program in Edmonds, Washington, and finished her certificate program there. And she's great. She's so better since.
So better.
So much
good
better.
Term.
She was great to start, and now she's so much better. So,
Christy, what time does the concert begin?
The concert begins at 7, but we'll open the doors at 6:30. We're actually closing our shop early at 6 tonight to set it up. We've had people stop by today, and we're like, so I'm going to a concert. It's here. And they look around because we've got our gift shops there. All the things are there. And I think some people have visualized it like our first Fridays where we throw a party every first Friday with music. And it's actually very different. What it is we move all of the tables, all the merchandise to the side, and the whole room is basically a one big empty floor. We'll set up some blankets, but we encourage people to bring blankets or pillows for floor seating. And we'll have some chairs set up around the perimeter for those who need to sit down. But it's an intimate venue. The point is really to be able to hear the music and
absolutely.
To kind of get to experience the, you know, what the singers are really bringing to the table, bringing to the stage, and to just gather with our community in just this small venue.
I'm so pleased also that Clay Good will be able to join us on the drums tonight. He's going to bring a smaller drum kit, the right size for a room that small, and the weather just didn't allow him to go out on the boat today, so he said yes.
Darn.
Sometimes the weather is in our favor.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
It kind of invites you to get cozy, which is what will be happening this
mm-hmm.
evening. Christy, about how many folks do you think you can accommodate?
Legally or like conceptually?
You know, folks sitting on each other's laps and getting comfy. What do you think the max is that you can? Because tiny post office, the emphasis is on tiny there.
It's very little, yeah. I think our last concert we had upwards of 50 people in there, some seated, but many standing, room only, and a lot of people couldn't quite get in. So I'm strongly encouraging people, if they'd like to attend tonight, which we hope you will, to get there when the doors open at 6:30 and stake out the best spots. So that you can be sure to see it. It's a free concert, $0. We do pass the hat for some donations to go towards the musicians and towards the series, but we're really trying to keep it just a accessible, affordable way to just enjoy some art and neighbors.
And Tom, you organized this one?
Well, Christy started it. And
you put together the musicians.
I'm good at working the phone, and getting people to say yes. Yeah.
Christy, you've been a real stimulus of downtown comings together and arts events and some creative thinking about how to, add to the excitement that our town can bring in the last few years. I'm sensing there's a kind of a revitalization of the excitement around downtown. Is that just because I don't spend a lot of time downtown, or is that really happening?
Sure. Well, I haven't been here long enough to really know, the kind of ebbs and flows of the energy downtown, and I certainly don't want to take credit for any type of resurgence, if there is one, but I can say that I'm proud to be working, alongside some really creative and enthusiastic entrepreneurs, artists, just community members who love Juneau, and they love our community, and they love getting out and doing things together and figuring out creative ways to make our town, make our world a better place. And so I think that there definitely is that right now. I think there's I think it's a great time to be alive in Juneau, to be young and able, because there's plenty of things to do, so many groups to get involved with and lend your hand and spirits to, lots of opportunities to create if you want to make them. I think now is a great time. I don't know if I can't necessarily say that there's been a time that wasn't, though.
We are talking with Christy Nami Erickson and Tom Locher about a free tiny post office concert that is tonight at the Kindred Post, that is at the corner of Front and Franklin. Doors open at 6:30, last time it was packed, so word to the wise, it's not Juneau style to show up early, but it sounds like if you want to get a spot on the floor, it would be good to show up as close as you can to when the doors open, especially because there is no charge. And the performers tonight include Tom Locher, pianist, and Clay Good on drums, and it sounds like two terrific vocalists, Carrie Groven and Alyssa Fisher. That's the Tiny Post Office Concert this evening at 7, but get there at 6:30. Thanks for joining us, you two, and thanks for putting it together.
Lori, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Jeff, too.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 29th of July, 2015. It's the birthday of the newspaper columnist Don Marquis, born in Walnut, Illinois, 1878, who invented the characters Archie the Cockroach and Mehitabel the Alley Cat. It's the birthday of Alexis de Tocqueville, born in Paris, 1805. He was 25 years old when the French sent him to America to study the American prison system, spent 9 months traveling around the country taking notes, and a few years later he published his famous book, Democracy in America. Alexis de Tocqueville, impressed by the fact that American democracy actually worked, he wrote, "America demonstrates invincibly one thing that I had doubted up to now, that the middle classes can govern a state, despite their small passions, their incomplete education, their vulgar habits. They can obviously provide a practical sort of intelligence, and that turns out to be enough." And it's the birthday of the poet Stanley Kunitz, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 1905. His father committed suicide in a public park before Kunitz was born. His mother erased all traces of the father from the house, refused to talk about him. But she did not destroy the books that the father had left behind, including the dictionary, which became one of Stanley Kunitz's favorite books. He opened it up every day to find a new word. He liked big words like eleemosynary or phantasmagoria. His first job was riding a horse down the streets of Worcester and lighting the gas lamps at night. He became a reporter for the Worcester Telegram, went off to Harvard, stayed for his master's degree, lived on a big farm in Connecticut, worked as a reporter and a farmer, was drafted into World War II, became a teacher at Bennington College, where he refused to expel a student who the president of the college wanted to expel. And when the president of Bennington showed up at Kunitz's house, Kunitz took a potted plant and threw it in the president's face and then left for good. His third book came out in 1958, Selected Poems. It was rejected by 8 publishers, 3 of whom even refused to read it. And when it was finally published, it won the Pulitzer Prize. Stanley Kunitz, who said, "It is out of the dailiness of life that one is driven into the deepest recesses of the self." Here's a poem for today by Joseph Stroud, "Meadowlarks and Hawks." A farm road in the San Joaquin, heading into the red dirt of the gold country, miles and miles, fence rows with meadowlarks singing on the wires, the song of one entering the song of another. All down the road, window open, I hear song trailing into song, the road continuing as far as I can see, and every mile or so, on top of a telephone pole, sits a red-tailed hawk, shoulders hunched, turning his slow iron gaze over all he claims of the singing world. Meadowlarks and Hawks, a poem by Joseph Stroud, from his collection Of This World, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau. July swim schedules are now available online at juneau.org/parkrec. Augustus Brown Pool is also offering swim lessons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings during the summer season. More information at 586-5325.
Well, thanks for staying tuned, staying with us on a Juno afternoon. And Linda Rosenthal is with us this afternoon. She is the recipient this year of the Mayor's Lifetime Achievement Award for the Arts, which she will receive in a ceremony at the Juno Arts and Humanities Center on August 21st. Thank you, Linda, for what you've contributed to Juno, and thanks for joining us today. We're glad to have you.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you for having me today.
I always assume that everyone who is aware of you understands that you're a world-class violinist, but maybe not all people do. Talk a little bit about the passion that you developed as a violinist. Where was that rooted? Where did that come from? And how did you find the courage to pursue a life of music? Because
like playing professional baseball, I would guess there are not a lot of people who are able to do that.
Right. You know, it almost feels like the violin chose me. It's weird, but I actually remember the very moment that I asked my mother when I was almost 6 years old if I could play the violin. Isn't that weird? That I don't remember very much from my childhood, but that I remember the moment. I remember exactly where I was and asking her the question. And it didn't come out of nowhere, though. I mean, my parents were both amateur violinists. And although they didn't play that much around the house, they constantly had music on. You know, the record player was going, the radio was on. And much of that, I think, was classical symphonic music, and particularly it must have been the violin, because why else would I have been so drawn to that very instrument? And really, it was it's the instrument that most spoke to me. And when I started to play, I think I knew early on this is what I wanted to do forever.
Your life's work.
It was, yeah.
And it's taken you around the world. What are some of the places that you've gone that have surprised you, meaning I never in my life thought I'd get to see this place?
Right, yeah. There. Well, okay, we'll start with our tour in the 80s. Paul, our friend, colleague, pianist Gary Smart, Juno, well-known guitar player Dan Hobson, and I went on a Pacific Rim tour. We were sent by the state, and it was kind of a consortium of arts councils that that made this happen. And we started out in Guam. That was our first stop. And then we went to the Northern Marianas, and it was just the most amazing adventure. We found ourselves playing in these unlikely venues, and finding that people really didn't know what to expect. You know, we were called a band.
and not what, exactly what we, a dance band.
Right,
but.
Right. Yeah, the band, the Rosenthal Band is coming to town or something like that. Anyway, so basically Paul and Gary would, you know, played, we kind of fanned out across the islands. And Dan and I did our program in villages where there were no pianos. And then we met up and did a joint concert in the largest, wherever the largest venue was. And we went to Rota, Tinian, and it just, it was amazing. I mean, it's the sort of thing I think I'll probably never get back there, but it was unforgettable.
The South Pacific.
Yes. Yeah.
How did you connect with Juno? You have made it a home. You're from New York, is that correct?
Actually, I grew up in Chicago.
Near Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know that Juno really is your a mainstay place for you. Why Juno?
Why Juno? Well, it came about really through the university. Paul and I were living in Fairbanks. That was our first
home. And Paul is your husband.
Is my husband, yes.
Correct.
That was our first home in Alaska. We lived there for 5 years. And early on, within a year of living there, he got a job at the university in the music department. I got this fabulous job with what was called Statewide Services. And they sent teachers out to communities that didn't have community colleges or had small community colleges, to villages or communities that requested 1, 2, 3 credit college courses. So they hired me to teach music appreciation, and which I had never done before, by the way, and also to play a concert, to give a concert. So it was 4 nights of teaching, and then the final night was always it ended with a performance for the community. And it was just, I was so lucky to get this job. I got to see all places in the state. I traveled to the Wedge, to Nome, Kotzebue, Bethel, everywhere, and all the villages around there, and all over Southeast Alaska. Anyway, what happened was that I've got the course kind of took off, and there were many requests. You know, people were requesting it, but there were more communities that seemed to ask for it in Southeast Alaska. So Juno, the community college, what was then the community college,
JDCC.
That's it, yeah. They said, Well, if you lived here, you could do even more, and maybe we could even start a music program, make this the basis of it. So I did, I called this home. I moved here with a wonderful support of so many people in the community back, you know, in mid-70s. And the university, of course, was just wonderfully supportive, and I continued to teach those classes and also classes here in Juneau, and including violin and chamber music and, you know, things of that nature, and became first 50% and then 60%, 70%, you know, pretty soon I grew to be a full-time instructor and then, you know, professor, and was a part of the faculty full-time.
So the university drew you
it
here.
It was the university.
But you didn't stop there. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, you pioneered the Juneau Jazz and Classics program, which
right.
is every May.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
You know, I for my travels, my performances in festivals, I loved being invited to play them. What did for the, what I could see, from, you know, it brought people to these sessions with all the other musicians. Festivals are very energizing and enriching, and they're, you know, the shortness of them, most of them, gives them a very special intensity. And Juneau, my home, you know, I just had this burning desire to start something right here in Juneau, something that was kind of tailor-made, I hope, to our community, and that I felt very passionately about, and that other people just seemed to get behind and support.
It now flows over 3 weekends, and the schedule includes many, many, many classes for learners as well. I've been to all kinds of music festivals and am not aware that of a typical festival that offers the learning aspect. I think that's a little different, or maybe I just haven't been to enough festivals.
No, that's right. When we started, I mean, because these two things are so important to me, the education and outreach, it's equal to the emphasis that we emphasis that we give to performances. So we have lots and lots of performances, some formal, some informal, free, ticketed. But we our mission has always been to include education, to send our artists into the schools, to bring kids into the noon concert, to bus them in, and just to give everybody in the community exposure in learning situations and in performance situations.
You're receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award, so you have the opportunity to look back a little bit. I want you to tell me, what's a big lesson you've learned as a performer all of these years? You've made it your life's work.
Right. You know, I think what I've learned over the years, it's just whether I'm performing or presenting or teaching, it's really about sharing something that's, you know, my music, whether, you know, or sharing presenting musicians or imparting information, something that I feel passionately about, that's near and dear to my heart. And it's the sharing aspect that I've learned to think about more than anything, that, you know, I've worked hard to, you know, on whatever it is I'm presenting, if it's, you know, via a recital or whatever, and just how important it is for me to that people have showed up to the event, and just to give them the very best experience I can. And it's about sharing and of myself, my music, and you know, we hope a wonderful couple hours with my audience.
Anything left on your musical, professional, or personal bucket list?
Well, you know, when I look back, I think I've always had, I didn't know they were called bucket lists, but I think all, if I have bucket lists, it's just things of an artistic nature. There are always things, these pieces that I suddenly discover or think back and that I have to learn. Yeah, and it just and or chamber works that I have to play, and places that I want to go back to, and you know, kinds of just recitals. This is that. It's pretty much, you know, until I guess I'm not playing anymore. That it's just all very focused on my music and jazz and classics as well. You know, I have dreams still for seeing it grow in certain ways, and so that's the nature of my bucket list. It's just ways to make jazz and classics better, and of course just do things with my violin and
still learning,
still grow, yeah,
still
yeah,
growing.
Learning.
That learning. Was the yep. word I was yep. going to say, growing. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us today, and congratulations, Linda. We're talking with Linda Rosenthal. She is a violinist. She is the founder of Juno Jazz and Classics 30 years ago. She will be receiving on August 21st the Mayor's Lifetime Achievement Award for the Arts. Thanks for being here today, Linda. Oh,
thank you so much for having me. Thank
you. This is Bird Note. In July in southeast Arizona, midday temperatures soar above 100 degrees. A cicada's high-pitched whine adds an edge to the searing heat. But relief is coming. The monsoon season begins. Winds from the south draw tropical moisture northward into the Sonoran Desert. Moist air colliding with intense heat and mountainous terrain breeds epic thunderstorms. Rainfall rejuvenates the arid land. Grass grows lush. Wildflowers spring forth. Gullies once dusty now rush with water. And birds sing. Cats and sparrows have waited for the late summer rains to begin their courtship. Now the males sing their plaintive phrases almost nonstop. Bonnerized sparrows add their distinctive sputters and trills. And a rufous-winged sparrow voices its gentle melody. The summer monsoon refreshes the desert world like a second spring. The soundscapes featured in today's show were recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com.
Well, that was a lovely interlude. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon, where the rain is also falling here in kind of a monsoon way and will continue to for at least the next 24 hours. I'm Lori Scandling, and our producer Jeff Brown is in the studio as well. With me, our next guest, Robin Thomas. She is with the Child and Family Services Behavioral Health Program. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me here. I have our director of that program or those services is Jen, and she
will be joining us.
She'll be joining us here
Great.
Shortly. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what the service provides, behavioral health. Do you provide direct counseling?
And actually, Jen is better suited for that. One thing that I do for Catholic Community Services, I'm the development director, and I work on kind of promoting our different programs and organizations as we have several main divisions, Southeast Senior Services, Hospice and Home Care of Juno, and then also our Child Family Services. So we kind of wanted to come on today to talk a little bit more specifically about our behavioral health program and a recent appeal letter that we sent out to most Juno residents. It's actually appeal that was sent out to probably roughly 3,000 to 4,000 people here in Juno and then some other smaller communities surrounding Juno, asking for some support for the behavioral health program. We're fortunate enough that we have the Benito and Francis Gagin Foundation is offering a match. So for every dollar that people donate to the behavioral health program, they'll match an additional dollar up to $12,500. So If the public donates a total of $12,500, that's up to $25,000 that can help support this program. And Jen can actually highlight a little bit more about behavioral health and the services and what they provide.
And welcome to Jen Carson, who is the director of the Child and Family Service Program under Catholic Community Services. Glad you could join us. Let's talk a little bit about what that division of Catholic Community Services provides so that people have an understanding of this, as you mentioned, appeal that is happening right now.
Sure. Thank you so much for having us on the air this afternoon. It's really appreciated. So what I really want to talk about is our program. It's fantastic. We provide outpatient clinical behavioral health services to the community throughout Juneau. We also provide services to Huna and Cake as well. A lot of people don't know that. We primarily focus on kids. So youth, anywhere from, I think our youngest client right now is about 3, up it, we can take up to 21, so kind of that transitional 18 to 21 year. And then really we're trying to focus a lot on the family unit altogether, because we know that a child's success is really going to happen if we can really focus on the parents or whoever is providing that parental guidance to the child.
So family counseling or, I don't know if group therapy is an overstatement of what you provide, but it sounds like having everybody in a room in a facilitated fashion is something that you do.
You know, we can work with parents or the family unit, either individually with the child present or without the child being there. So I think that's one of the pluses that we can offer to the community.
How frequently is this service available? Do you have full-time hours, and how many clinicians do you have available to serve the public?
Right now we have 4 full-time clinicians. We provide services anywhere from 8 in the morning until about 6, 7 o'clock at night, Monday through Friday. Some kids come every day. Some only come once a week. It really depends individually on what they need.
And are there offices up at 6th and Harris where other Catholic Community Services offices are, or are they located somewhere else?
So our primary office is at the 6th and Harris or Gold Street office. We also provide some services out in the Valley as well to really try and accommodate the after-school programming when school is in session. We're also fortunate enough to be able to provide service in the charter school. That's something that started this past school year, and we're hoping to continue that on into the school year as well.
Is this an area that is growing in terms of demand as people become more aware that even some of the youngest individuals need support? You mentioned the 3-year-old, and I paused on that for a moment.
You know, I don't know that it's an area that's growing. I think people are just becoming more aware that the earlier we intervene, the more success we have in the future with people not needing services into adulthood. I think our primary focus or clientele that are people that have suffered some type of trauma, whether they've, just observed trauma in the home or they themselves have had some type of trauma.
Are your clinicians trained in historical trauma as well, such as that which many Indigenous populations have struggled with?
You know, we're fortunate enough to have one clinician that just recently graduated graduate school who has some extensive training in that area. But all of them are gaining training, but there's so much more that can be sought to really, I think, gain an expertise in that area. And that's something that we're focused on. And I think that we are very dedicated to serving that population because we see the need in the community.
How has behavioral health changed, say, in the last 10 years?
I think, unfortunately, there's been more regulations put on from a federal standpoint. There's quite a bit of service that is not paid for by Medicaid or Medicare, which is our primary funding sources, which can be very frustrating because as a community, I think they want us to really open up our arms and go into the community, go into the client's home and really provide that service. And unfortunately, not all of that is covered under Medicaid or Medicare service. And that creates a little bit of a gap.
For folks who don't qualify for either of those, is there a fee set that that's established, or do you work on a sliding scale with the family? How might somebody get to know that system?
That's a great question. We do offer a sliding scale for those that either they don't have any type of insurance, whether it's private or it's an Allied Kid Care or Medicaid, that they can choose to pay. We're really open to working with families, so maybe they can't even pay the portion that they're required to pay under the sliding scale. So we would work with them to come up with something that's reasonable. I mean, unfortunately, we can't provide completely free service, which would be great if we could, because we know that there is such a need. But I think we're willing to really work with people.
Well, Jennifer, that takes us back then to the appeal that has gone out to, is this a mailer that Catholic Community Services has developed? Asking for support.
You will see it in mailboxes, and then there was also like an email blast out as well that you might see email correspondence in regards to the request.
And as Jennifer has shared with us, there is a matching grant that will be provided to double contributions up to $12,500. What else should people know about this particular service offered by Catholic and Community Services? Are there any areas that you won't deal with, for example, under behavioral health?
We tend to take the kids who are having a lot of difficulties in school, daycare service. You know, they're threatened on being kicked out of those services because of those behaviors. So I'm not sure that there is one that we won't take. Because we do try to open our hearts. And, you know, if we look at the mission of Catholic Community Service, it really is to serve the poor and vulnerable. And this service actually really hits that mission.
How can someone who would like to know more about what the service is, what's offered, and how they can connect with it, what's the best way for them to get more information?
I think that would be to call our main line at 463-6100 and then take the option for our behavioral health program. And we have a clinical services coordinator, Sherry, who is fantastic at giving people information that they might need. She can also do a screening to see if there is an option for our service. Unfortunately, right now we do have a wait list for service. We are trying to really restructure our program so that we don't have this wait list. I call that number, again, 463-6100, to find out more information.
You can also visit our website, ccsjuno.org. You can also donate on our site, learn about volunteer opportunities. And if people can afford to give monetary donations, they can also volunteer. They can donate chalk. They can donate bubbles, jump ropes. You know, watching these children and their success stories, especially these young children, as I talk to the staff and the stories that they relay back to me are just so heartwarming. And the success rate of these children that they see out in the community and 5-10 years down the road and how successful they are.
Thanks for bringing that part up, Jen. We've been talking with Jennifer Carson and Robin Thomas of the Child and Family Services Program of Catholic Community Services. If you'd like more information, check out ccsjuno.org or 463-6100. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley.